You are listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Hey, you're listening to Go Dig a Hole, your toolkit for a career in archaeology. I'm Andy.
And I'm Chris. This podcast is geared to help you get a leg up in a competitive job market and understand the many career paths that archaeology has to offer. This podcast series is based on our blog at godigahole.com.
You can contact us on our blog, add our emails in the show notes, or on Twitter at GoDigAHole. Let's start the show.
Hi, welcome to the fifth episode of the Go Dig a Hole podcast. I've got Andy here, and we'll be speaking to Heath Bailey with the National Forest Service. Go ahead and say hi, Heath.
Hi.
How's it going?
Yeah. So on this podcast, we speak a lot about CRM archaeology just because that's what most of our experience is in, and that's where most of our contacts are. But this is a really cool chance for us to branch out and talk to someone in the National Forest Service, which is public sector archaeology. And that's something that when I was starting off, I always wanted to know about, and I didn't feel like the difference between public sector and private sector archaeology was really explained very well when I was an undergrad.
Yeah, me neither. And we've also had a couple emails from some listeners that they really wanted to learn more about public sector jobs and how to get them and, you know, tips on applying for them. So this is going to be a really great insight into the Park Service.
Yeah, and I was actually wrong. I misspoke and said National Forest Service. Heath works for the Park Service. So Heath, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do and how you got started?
Well, I've been in archaeology for about 14 years. My first field season was in 2001. I worked in CRM early on for about four field seasons. I worked for two universities and one small private CRM firm. My early experiences were in North Alabama, Southeast Tennessee, and in New York as well. So my first four field seasons were great. I had a variety of field experiences from phase one through phase three. I did GPR work, and I got to see a lot of different sites, both historic and prehistoric. So that experience paid forward my ability to return to school, and I actually finished a bachelor's at Appalachian State University in cultural anthropology, and I had a focus in that time at Appalachian State on uplands archaeology or Appalachian Summit archaeology. So the logical progression from App State was to go into Appalachian Summit work, to work within the region. So I got a technician's position I applied for and received a position at Great Smoky Mountains National Park in 2008.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was a great shake. You know, that was a great first shake in federal service work, and I've been doing it since then. So about 7 years, going on 7 years, and I've worked my way up from technician now to supervisory archaeologist for this park, for Great Smoky Mountains. I had a brief stint in northern New Mexico where I worked at Bandelier National Monument, again with the Park Service, and then with the Forest Service on the adjacent Jemez Ranger District, the Santa Fe National Forest.
Very cool. So you got to do some work before you went to undergrad?
Correct. My time in archaeology has been a little unorthodox, if you will. I didn't start out in academia. Actually, I was a geography major at the University of Alabama and took some time off, just started working, actually, between semesters, and then started working in archaeology for the university, and I really enjoyed it. The work was tough. The Alabama summers were long and hot, but the work was both physical and intellectual, and I came to really love archaeology, both in the field and in the lab, And so that sparked my interest. That really piqued my interest. And I decided I wanted to go back to school for it. So that was really my start, was in the private sector. Like I said, I had some great experiences all over the state of Alabama, East Tennessee, and elsewhere on the East Coast where there were projects. I was a stringer for a number of years where, you know, I would come onto projects and not really know how long they would keep me. But if there was work afterwards, maybe they'd keep me on for another phase two or a larger data recovery if it was coming up. So, I started out like a lot of people, just cutting my teeth, hoping that, you know, the firm that I worked for would keep me on for a longer period of time so I could continue to pay the bills. And it paid off eventually. So it took some years, but, you know, I'd say my best advice to young people in the private sector is just to keep after it and know, too, that your experiences in the field do pay off and there is a future in archaeology. And I love shovel bumming. You know, a lot of people think early on that living out of the back of your truck is less than desirable, but I think it's something that you have to do to cut your teeth and really, you know, dig in, no pun intended.
Love it.
That's very cool. So I should back up for a second and let our listeners know that I actually met Heath when I was also at Appalachian State doing my undergrad. And Heath, some of your stories in class, I always thought that it was just fascinating that I had a classmate who had already had field experience when almost none of us did, and, you know, barely any of us understood even what working in the field would be like. So Heath, some of your stories that you had in class were partly responsible for me following a career in archaeology.
Well, that's cool to hear. I'm glad that I had some influence on yourself and maybe even some other people, you know, with that perspective of having already been in the field and being able to tell some stories. You've been in the field for some time now. You're probably influencing people similarly. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, I've also served my time in the hot summers of Alabama.
I love it. I miss it, honestly. You know, I my work now is partially in the field, but largely at a desk. But that's okay too. We have some projects coming up that'll free me from the chains of my workstation, at least in the summertime.
Nice. I bet they have some great weather right now too. Anyway,
you know, it's cold, sorry. But it's cold, but it's good, and the leaves are off, so it's a great time to actually be able to see into the woods and do survey work and record historic sites specifically.
Nice, yeah. So did you ever do an official field school, or did you just kind of jump right into it with your first CRM job?
Yeah, I've never had an internship, and honestly, I've never had a formal field school. I was paid to do archaeology work from the beginning. Like I said, it's definitely unorthodox that be the case. But
lucky you, eh?
I know that the University of Alabama needed warm bodies on a big project. And, you know, funny thing, it took me, I think, 3 Mondays of going to the director for the Office of Archaeological Research at Moundville. I bugged him for 3 Mondays, and on the 3rd Monday, he decided to bring me on. So, it's been a wild ride since then.
No, that's great. You got to bug your professors because they do have something for you.
True.
Nice. So you've also done some CRM work too, right? In addition to the Park Service?
Yeah, absolutely. I worked for University of Alabama for, I think, 3 years. And then I worked for Jacksonville State for a very short stint. And then I worked for a private firm out of Chattanooga.
Oh, okay. Tennessee. I guess my confusion there was I often forget that there's still some universities with CRM wings that are attached to them.
Yeah, absolutely. U of A still has one. They get great projects. University of Tennessee, nearby me here in the Smokies, is another one.
Maybe if there's any high schoolers listening, that's probably a good thing to look at when you're choosing a place to go for your undergraduate degree is a school that maybe has a CRM wing attached.
Yeah, I think that's great advice.
Yeah, for sure. So how do you see, what are the differences that you've seen between like CRM work and your work in the public sector with the Park Service?
Well, in CRM work, I was, a field aide, an archaeological aide or an archaeological technician, whatever you want to call it. I would say, at least for the Park Service, our job is more to preserve than to excavate. So, I'm the advocate for our park, for the archaeology within it. And if we don't have to excavate, we generally don't. So that's a difference so far as what my daily responsibilities are and how I spend my field seasons. I do survey. I do not excavate a great deal in the Park Service, just because of our preservation-oriented mission versus, say, the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, or the Forest Service. We don't have nearly as many undertakings. You know, we don't have extractive industries. We don't put out timber contracts. So generally, we just leave the forest in state, whereas, you have energy contracts on BLM lands, timber contracts, and various other activities on Forest Service lands. And sometimes you do encounter where you have to do phase two testing and phase three data recoveries. Such is the case with the Park Service, but usually we can mitigate effects where we don't necessarily need to do data recoveries, unless there's road work or something like that. But it's a rare thing. Every now and again, there's utility work as well that would require data recovery or excavation. When I was in CRM, I was excavating all the time. I was doing phase two testing. I was doing excavations every summer. And that just hasn't been the case, really, with the Park Service or the Forest Service. If we can find a way to preserve archaeology for future generations, we generally do that. If there's a way to go around a site or a historic district, an archaeological district, whatever the case, we'll usually find another way.
That's pretty cool. And that's one of those odd things about our line of work in archaeology is with it being a destructive science, like the best thing for a site is often for us to just not touch it at all.
Correct. I think that's key. I do think that in cultural resource management and CRM work, it's great to be able to be versed in method and practice and do all the excavating that you can in your early years. And perhaps you can continue in CRM as a crew chief. Perhaps you can continue as a principal investigator later, whatever, and continue in that way. I love doing that. I've done a lot of that now that I'm working for the federal government.
Nice.
I'm not doing it as much. So I'll assist our contractors if we do bring people in to excavate if there's ever a need. And there hasn't been many projects like that going back 10 years at the park even. But generally we avoid effects where it can be done.
So do you get to do a lot more interaction and education for the public with your job?
I'm involved in that. I am. I dictate to some effect how we educate the public about archaeology, archaeological resources within the park, historic resources within the park, and this sort of thing, which is, that's obviously a different in comparison to private sector work. You do outreach when people come around and ask what you're doing, right, when you're in the field.
Yeah.
And I do that in the park too, because we always have curious people that wondering, what are you doing? We always get the comment, you must be panning for gold, right? You
guys are yeah. going to say, do you find any gold? Save me some.
Where are the dinosaurs at?
Always. Can't avoid those things. But
yeah.
Doing public outreach is important to me and special to me. We do conservation work as well. We have over 200 cemeteries at Great Smoky Mountains, and I share in the responsibilities to look after those cemeteries to ensure that they're not eroding in a way that would cause for information loss, and just to make sure that they're cared for, that trees aren't falling in them, that the structural fabric of the site, the headstones and footstones aren't displaced, aren't walking away in visitors' hands, whatever the case.
Yeah.
So that's something a little different than what you might be tasked with in the CRM world. So I'm essentially a steward and a caretaker to the archaeological resources within my park unit, Great Smoky Mountains in my case.
Cool. That's a great way to put it. So for CRM in the winter, people always say to field techs, you know, like start writing, become a good writer through college so that once you get put up to crew chief, you can write reports and you can keep yourself busy over the winter if your CRM firm lets you. Do you think that writing is a big part of what you do? And if is that a skill that people are going to need if they want to go into the park service?
Absolutely, it is. Being a good writer helps you in so many regards, in archaeology and anthropology. Whatever it is that you choose for yourself, you know, whether you want to go to oral histories, ethnographies, and you know, or if you want to be an architectural historian, there's room for all these things. Or if you want to do historic American building survey work, architectural photography, so forth. Everyone has to write reports in the course of their work, no matter what they do in the field. They have to turn around on the back end and make summary of findings, determinations of effect, or longer reports for bigger projects. So, yeah, I'd say it's huge. You want to verse yourself in method and practice in the field, and then you want to verse yourself as well in the language of archaeology, historic preservation, Section 106, the National Historic Preservation Act, and all the sorts of things that go into to the work that we do. As ethical archaeologists.
Nice. Very nice. One other question I have is, well, some of our readers have sent this in. So in CRM, Andy kind of touched on this, in the winter, you know, for the most part in CRM, we're out of work. And then there's also the shovel bumming aspect where we're chasing contracts and there's a lot of downtime and it can be feast or famine. And we've had some people say that, you know, they really want a job with the government. And I don't know that it's necessarily, you know, riding the gravy train until the biscuit wheels fall off with a federal job. Is there any, like, downtime or is it feast or famine in public sector as well?
You know, that's a good question. It's feast or famine in a different way. I would say that from the GS5 grade forward, so GS5 is essentially like an entry-level archaeological technician with a bachelor's degree. So once you're out of school, you can qualify for GS5 with field school experience and you know, the list of classes that you might see advertised with these positions, which you would all have, or at least have credit for in my case, right? Because I said earlier, I didn't have a formal field school, but
yeah.
Having done all the work that I did, I got credit for field site reporting, laboratory methods, and 6 hours of field school because I'd done all that work over the course of 4 years prior to even going back to school.
Nice.
What was the original question? I apologize.
To simplify the question is, as far as going paycheck to paycheck, you know, do you have steady work throughout the year or are there times where you're scrambling to find other work like shovel bums in traditional CRM roles do?
Yeah, so not necessarily me because I'm the supervisory archaeologist, I'm the park archaeologist, but for our technicians and our, and our paid interns, those are typically, in the case of an internship, those are 3-month positions. In the case of a technician's position, those are temporary six-month terms, if you will, or temporary stints. And then you can qualify non-competitively in some cases, depending on how the announcements run. You can qualify non-competitively in future years, you know, with satisfactory performance evaluation. If you did good work essentially the previous year, we can bring you back on without having to advertise sometimes. It just depends on the situation, but not feast or famine. But if you're coming in at the GS5 technician level, the short long of it is, yeah, you should probably plan on 6 months of work and then 6 months of figuring out what you're going to do next. So,
yeah,
you know, if that answers your question. But
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a good place to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back with some more questions and some more tips from Heath.
Telling a different story to the traditional lines of archaeology, the An Archaeologist podcast seeks the stories and ideas that are often overlooked or not considered real archaeology. Video games, anarchism, and archaeology in the middle of hostile areas. Host Tristan doesn't search under the rocks, he destroys them. Available on iTunes every fortnight.
Okay, and we're back. We're talking to Heath Bailey about working with the Park Service. So we just touched on how if I were to get a technician position with the Park Service, I would be temporarily employed for 6 months, and then I'd be figuring out what to do next. Well, 6 months of solid work sounds pretty good to me after jumping from 1 month to 2 week to 3 month CRM projects. A nice 6 months in one place sounds pretty awesome.
It's not bad.
Yeah, that's a pretty good gig. So I saw, I think it was just last week, an advertisement for, it was the Park Service in Oregon.
Yeah, they're hiring about 1,000 tech jobs. And it's, like you said, Heath, they're about 6 month appointments to a tech job.
Sure.
Yeah, so is there anything in particular we should be looking for with the advertisements of Park Service positions? And maybe can you touch on good resume tips?
Sure. I would say apply to as many of those technician positions as you can.
Okay.
Those mass advertisements, that's a great place to start. And in terms of having a big candidate pool, of course they do. When you see those come out through the BLM, they come out through the Forest Service, and they list all the various places that those jobs will be located across the country or across the region, just depending on how it's advertised. And that's a great place to go. You can select your ideal locations if you like. And in looking at, say, the language, the way that it's advertised, I would say go to the OPM page, if you will, or the Office of Personnel Management. It's opm.gov.
Okay.
For every position in the federal service, whether it's an archaeological technician, a supervisory archaeologist like me, or a human resources specialist, whatever you're interested in,
There's
language for those positions, performance standards for those positions, and expected experience levels for those positions. And if you want to qualify well, guess what language you need to use? You need to use the OPM language from that position description. So just like so many people give you the tip of feed the language back to your potential employer for an advertisement in your resume, it's the same thing. So if you were to go to the Office of Personnel Management webpage, look at the position descriptions, use the language in those position descriptions in answering questions in the advertisement, you're going to have a better chance at it. If you can use that language in describing the duties that you've done with previous employers, you're going to have a better position. You're going to have, a better chance of qualifying highly for that particular position. So
that's also a really good tip.
Yeah, that's for resumes as well. If you can summarize your duties with old jobs in that way, then you're going to have a better shot at it. And it's a little different than the CV format that we're always so accustomed to seeing, listing individual sites and so forth that you've worked on. A lot of people aren't going to know where 1MA10 is or 1DK71 or all these various sites that you've worked on. Just summarize your work in the way that they want it phrased on the OPM page and in the advertisement itself. And I think that's great. It's always going to vary between whether you're just an archaeological aide, a crew lead, or a supervisor. It's just going to be different every time. So just make sure that you maybe change that language every time to fit the announcement.
Right.
That's a good tip.
That's incredible advice. That's like the one weird trick they don't want you to know.
Go to the OPM page, opm.gov. Look for a GS5 archaeological technician. Boom, all the language is in there.
Nice. Well, Heath, do you have any more pointers or skills that have been particularly useful to you or that you think that people should be developing early on to make them good candidates for Park Service jobs?
You know, I'd say just take every opportunity you can. Look for companies that take a variety of projects. So not just pedestrian survey projects. You want to be versed in ground penetrating radar, phase one, phase two, phase three, and for a variety of reasons, whether it's road work, whether it's utilities work, whether it's, you know, all the various things that are contracted out for archaeology's sake, just build a diverse skill set, if you will. I think that's a great thing. Be willing to move around, see a lot of different archaeology. I kind of specialize in southeastern archaeology early on, but I've seen archaeology in the southwest, I've seen it in the northeast now, and I think that just makes you a better candidate to be able to encounter any situation and roll with it and know what to do, or at least who to ask if you don't know what to do. But I think building that resume, building that skill set, I'd say that's key. And be willing to pick up the work where other people set it down. I was a crew lead before I went back to school. I led phase one work before I went back for my bachelor's. And if you have leadership skills, let that be known. If you want to lead work and if you want to co-author reports, let that be known. You can start out writing management summaries. You can start out writing geologic overviews or summary of investigations, past investigative work, the little sections and reports that add up to the greater whole. You may not be able to author a whole report, but maybe you can just get experience authoring little parts of it and gain some writing experience that way. People really look for that stuff. You can say you contributed to something if you didn't author it or co-author it. Those are just little things that you can do in the course of your time early on, I think, to pay your experience forward and to gain those experiences you will need for GS7, GS9, and even GS11 and greater positions. Those all correlate to crew chief, supervisory archaeologist, principal investigator kind of positions. So.
Very nice, Heath. And I'm sure as well as while you've been working all over the country and doing all different types of work, you've developed quite a network too. And that's one of those skills that I think isn't emphasized enough, or, it is emphasized, but it can't be stressed enough. And so what are some tips that you would have for someone starting off, like how to network and how to build their network of contacts?
Sure. I'd say know regional contacts. If you're interested in lithic resources, know the lithic experts. If you're interested in fire archaeology in the Southwest, know the fire archaeologists that get out there and do that work.
Nice, yeah.
If you're interested in ceramics, if you're interested in osteology or paleobot or whatever the case, know those contacts and know the professors that are kind of pushing the edge on that and, that have their names on papers every year at conferences. Attend the conferences, approach these professors, or approach these field archaeologists, whatever the case, and talk to them about your interests. Talk to them about how it is that ask them some of the questions you've been asking me. How do I get ahead? How do I get experience? And archaeologists generally are fairly approachable people. So I think conference attendance and really just being able to level with folks and approach them candidly. And impromptu is key. It's funny. Starting out, I thought of a lot of people, the big names in archaeology, if you will. I held them on high and thought that they were these big personalities. Turns out they're just like you and me. They've been doing it longer than you and me. They're very approachable, and they have great lessons to broadcast to junior archaeologists. I'm still a student of archaeology. I feel like I'm still a junior archaeologist. I'll be doing this for a while, is my guess. But I think that just learning from your predecessors and the folks whose shoulders you're standing on, I think that's key. Conference attendance, making networks, being the kind of person that would approach professors and people in the know, if you will.
So, yeah, I'm so glad that you said that about professors. Being a little scary or something, like people treat them as celebrities almost as they go to conferences. And
yeah,
it's just like, just go and ask them a question. They probably just want to go get a beer after anyway. So just invite them for a beer.
Oh, I still get nervous at conferences, of course. I'm still wowed by professors that I spent lots of hours with in the classroom. And knowing that they have 20 years of experience on me, maybe 40 years of experience on me, it's intimidating. Of course, it's intimidating. And gaining experience and just gaining time in conversation with folks, whether over a beer at the bar after a symposium or on the phone or exchange of emails. I think that's key.
Nice.
Definitely. Well, I think we're getting close to a good point to wrap up. Heath, are there any other points that you'd like to talk about?
Not right away. I think that the federal service is a great way to go for folks in terms of doing original survey. A lot of our federal lands need a tremendous amount of survey work. So if you're looking at getting in on phase one, phase one surveys, working for the federal government's a great way to go. If you're interested in doing fire archaeology, the federal service is a great way to go too. Nice. I have a lot of wildland fire experience. I'm a wildland firefighter, a resource advisor, an archaeologist on fire. I go out as an archaeologist on wildland fires. This year I went to Alaska, Northern California. I was in Northern California last year too. Oh, wow. So there are a lot of opportunities in the federal government that are offered that maybe you don't see in CRM, right? Fire archaeology is one of those. Working as an archaeologist after natural disasters is another. I was an archaeologist and a resource advisor on the Gulf oil spill for an entire winter between 2010 and 2011. That was a really great experience to be out there working with oil cleanup crews, safety managers, operations managers, and to be thrown into situations where you have to make decisions on the fly for a resource that you may or may not be, completely familiar with, but you know the process. And I think that kind of experience is great for young leaders, for young archaeologists, so far as making decisions in the field. So.
Okay, that's really helpful. So you said that you've traveled quite a bit in the past year to different places around America.
In the last year, I've been to Mexico in the last year, but I've done archaeology work all over the states. Yeah,
nice.
Maybe not in the last year, but I did go to Northern California as an archaeologist and resource advisor.
Yeah, I feel like. I feel like I have to ask you because this is the one question that everyone who emails us asks us. They just want to know, how do you travel through archaeology? Basically, how do you get paid to travel? Mm-hmm. And I think CRM is obviously a great way to do that. And it sounds like through the Park Service, you're able to do that as well.
Absolutely. Great thing about the Park Service is as we know, everyone loves the Park Service. It's the country's, the Park Service units around our country are the most culturally significant, sometimes archaeologically significant resources that we have in our federal land holdings. And for that reason, you get to see amazing places like, for me, Bandelier National Monument. I got to spend 3 years there. Never would have thought that I'd had such an experience as that and such an area, so archaeology rich, and the adjacent Jemez Ranger District as well. I think that it's a great way to travel. Mesa Verde comes to mind as well, mm-hmm. and so many other Park Service units around the country have just some of the best archaeology you'll see anywhere in North America. So it's a great way to go, absolutely.
I'm glad you said that because I know a lot of people want to travel to do archaeology in foreign countries, and there's just so much great archaeology that you can get a job for here in this country. So
absolutely. Yeah. And it may not be always that you're in the field. It could be that if you're interested in interpreting archaeology, just to kind of get your foot in the door for the federal service, that could be good too. You may not have a shovel in hand or a trowel in hand, but you may work at a visitor center, giving programs are giving talks about archaeology and history. So that's something to also consider.
Nice. Yeah.
Very nice. Well, Heath, that's about all we've got for you. Thank you so much for your time. And this has been really helpful advice for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks for asking me on. If anybody has any questions, you're welcome to reach out to me, if you would like, at Great Smoky Mountains National Park, anytime.
Nice. And we'll include some contact info in the show notes too.
Okay, great. I love talking to young archaeologists, and hopefully this will inspire one or two in the process. We'll see.
Thanks for listening to Go Dig a Hole, your archaeology toolkit. The music is provided with permission from Karas with their song, What Does God Need with a Starship? Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Check us out on our blog at godigahole.com.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.